It's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, yes, back in the building. Ali is away, but he will be back soon. Y'all got to hear that from him last week, but he will be back soon. But in the meantime, between time, it's you and I. I hope y'all good. How y'all doing? Yeah, okay. All right. That's what's up. Yo, real quick. Yo, shout out to everybody. I just discovered the comment section on the Spotify page. You know, I'm an Apple cat. You know what I mean? I don't really do too much Spotify. But I seen that some people, you know, commented on the last app. And then I went in there and I seen there was quite a few comments that I hadn't seen. So I hit up, you know, replied or whatever. But yeah, thank you. Peace to the people that commented and all the other commenters. And what I'm gonna try to do, The goal is now to keep the IG page current. Cause how I typically do it when I post the little artwork for the episode, is typically an episode behind. So I want to give y'all the opportunity to engage on the Instagram for the actual current episode, which makes more sense than, I mean, come on, it makes absolute sense. Anyway, so look out for that. Shit, what's going on? Did y'all enjoy your fourth? Yeah, okay. I had a good time. I didn't do too much. I didn't do anything. I kicked it at the crib. It was way too hot. We were in the middle of a heat wave. It was like 100 degrees. I was tucked away in my living room, climate controlled. The only place in the apartment that was cool, because I'm still having these little AC issues. It should be done by tomorrow. But yeah, man, it was a tough one. But I didn't do too much. I didn't go out. Well, actually, I did. I took a walk early in the day, and honestly, I'm not bugging. The fourth wasn't as bad as the second and the third, actually. The fourth was okay. The fourth was like 92 degrees, but it wasn't as hot as the prior days. So I did get a little walk out, and I seen some of the fighter jets flying up the Hudson or whatever. And I tell you this, man, for what it's worth, America, they are some of the best when it comes to propaganda. Boy, you would think things are doing well here. You would think we are all the way committed to everything we say, liberty and justice for all. You would think everything was all good. We eating apple pie and kumbaya and all of that. No, it's not. But it looks good. It looks good. You know, the pomp and circumstances, that budget is always on 10. So they had some interesting little flybys. Yeah, some jets with the red, white, and blue smoke. That was kind of cool. You know, it was kind of cool. That was kind of cool to see. I seen a little bit of that. And they flew quite a few. I was there for at least 10 minutes just watching. I had no clue that it was going to be there. And I was like, okay, this is 250, huh? That's what they do. This is 250. I see that allegedly Trump grifted the American people with the little flim flam. He got his little spinoff 250. I forget what the original 250 is, but he created something called Freedom 250, allegedly. He took some bread, allegedly. I don't know. Don't come suing me. Yeah, 250, man. It was really just a day to cook out, you know, for me. It wasn't anything to really wave no flag or get super patriotic of it, because, you know, America is America is America, right? Sometimes I feel like America needs a new writer. You know, new writers for at least these new episodes, you know, because I just feel like the plot has just been redundant. You know, we had a bunch of white supremacists in white masks, which is like the new hoods covering their faces, marching through D.C. with Confederate flags. Look at silly, though. That shit look crazy. But then, this is so funny. This was the interesting part about it, though. They doing all that trying to, you know, make a little scene or whatever. You know, it feels more like a tantrum, to be totally honest with you. But then there was a photo that came out taken by this photographer, Cheney Orr, of a bunch of those white supremacists on the train in D.C. And right in the middle with no mask on is a black woman, Bernita Boulding, 33-year-old mother of two from D.C., just sitting in the midst of all. It's a real powerful photo, real powerful photo. What they say, a picture's worth 1,000 words. It's at least 1,000 words, you know, and it's one of those photos that make you think. It's been a lot of people saying it's got allusions to like Ruby Bridges going to, you know, integrating the school system. It's just seeing the stark contrast between all of this hate and just the black woman just, you know, living in the midst of it all, getting through her day, you know, because and honestly, it's such a, I don't say an analogy for what's going on, but it's just a good representation for just how it is for certain people here. But yeah, that photo came out and I was trying to find out if she had spoken out about it or whatever, but I haven't really seen anything. Last I saw it, it was a quick little profile. I want to say it was in the Washington Post, where they talked to her brother, a younger brother, I want to say Paul. He spoke about her, and he was like, he was concerned about her because he said she has mental issues, kind of kept it vague or whatever, which was odd to like, I don't know. I don't know if that should have been the, you know, the center of the, whatever, the center of the article. But anyway, yeah, they talked to the family. I guess some people have tried to bring up she has an arrest record. It's hilarious that these people that are parading hate with masks on some real, you know, coward shit, somehow somebody tries to dox this woman who's just living her life. They're like, but she has an arrest record. What does that have to do with her being on the train? You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. You know how they try to shirk the responsibility or avoid the shame of the bullshit that they be on. But anyway, salute to Bernita. You know, we with you. Glad you safe. You know, sorry you had to be in the midst of all of that. But, you know, that's America, unfortunately. Speaking of America, I finally made it through Once Upon a Time in America. Old school gangster flick that came out back in 84. Shout out to my man Skeeter D. He used to always talk about it. And it was like one of the Dun Dadas because it's 4 hours. I think that's the original cut. The cut that I saw was the extended director's cut with some of the deleted scenes put in there, restored or whatever. The joint was ridiculous. It got an intermission in the whole thing. It's crazy. Who's in it? De Niro, James Woods, Joe Pesci pops up. It's a good movie. It could have been, we could have cut that. It ain't had to be 4 hours. It was a lot. It was expansive. It was a little, it was good, but there was, again, like there was a little bit of fat. There was a little bit of fat. Some of these scenes, they ain't need to be there. It's so interesting. This is 84 that it came out. So some of the stuff that they doing in the movie is like, wow, I don't even know if they could do that anymore. You know, but cool little gangster flick takes place like in the Prohibition time. They living in that underworld, making money that's really in line with what's going on with Prohibition. And then when Prohibition ends, they kind of got to pivot a little bit. And, you know, it's worth checking out if you got a lot of time on your hands. Fortunately, due to that heat wave, I was ducking the sun, so I wasn't going outside. I said, yo, let me go ahead and watch this. And I got through it. Actually, it took me about 2 days. I didn't sit down and watch the whole thing in one sitting. I watched a good amount. Then I went out, had shows, and I came back the next day, and I finished it up. And, Once Upon a Time in America, it wasn't too bad. I recommend it. If you've seen it, let me know what you think. And if you do watch it, double back, come back, let me know what you think, you know. It was cool. I'm not going to say, yo, you need to see it. I'm not going to say that, but it was fine. If you like gangster flicks, De Niro did his thing. And even more so, I'm going to be honest with you, James Woods did his thing. It's kind of rare to me to see somebody, I don't say outshine De Niro, but just like hold their own in a way that they just is like captivating, you know? Like they just, yeah, James Woods did his thing. James Woods, his character was cool. So yeah, it's worth checking out. What else did I do? I went to Taylor Swift's wedding. Oh, damn, I forgot. I probably shouldn't be able to tell the people that. But yeah, I wound up pulling up on Taylor Swift's wedding over at the Garden. I wasn't directly invited, but my cousin, he was working concessions at the wedding, so he got me in. You know what I mean? I got up in there, they snuck me into like one of the little suites that they had. So I was in the suites. They had open bar, all types of food. I got a T-shirt. It was cool. It was quaint, you know? Even though it was the Garden, it felt so intimate, you know? It was interesting to see love, you know? To see love in a time like this, to see, you know what I mean? Just to two people just sharing their love just amongst people that, just a few people that matter. Nah, I didn't go to that shit. But I was like, damn, Taylor Swift got married at the fucking Garden, at Madison Square Garden. That is unbelievably tacky. That shit is tacky as hell. I ain't got nothing against Taylor Swift. I don't even know enough about her outside of the fact that she's killing things and she puts up numbers and she re-recorded a whole lot of a catalog. I always say out of spite, but out of like standing on business and you're not going to own my shit. So let me get this money. Y'all mess with this batch over here, which I admire. But I've never really ever listened to any of her music with any real intention. You know what I'm saying? I might have heard it in the background, but to be honest with you, I don't think I could tell you any of her records. But long story short, so nothing against her, but it's just like, having a wedding at Madison Square Garden. Now, obviously, that's a flex. That's a very big dog. That's not even a rich flex. That's just a flex. But it's a tacky-ass flex at an arena? At an arena? I don't know. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. Tied to knot. Travis Kelce is almost like a plus one, sadly. He's like a plus one. I bet if he... if he got a little too far from Taylor and tried to roam the halls, it'd probably be a woman with a clipboard that pull. Excuse me. Who are you here with? Who are you here with, sir? I'm Travis. I'm marrying Taylor. Who? Travis Kelce, that's gonna be my wife. I'm marrying Taylor today. I'm the groom. Oh. He's the guy. Okay, he's the guy. Okay, cool. Cool, we need you to wear your laminate. You know, we can't have you just running around like that, security and all, you know? But anyway, good luck with the wedding. Good luck with the vows and the matrimony. Anyway. Yeah, man. So Taylor got married to this guy who used to play football. Sadly, that's kind of how it's been played out. That's the optics of it all. But, you know, hey, it is what it is, man. Go ahead and say I do. Go ahead and say I do, brother. And say it loud for us up in the rafters. We can hear it. We can hear it up here. Yeah, I ain't hear you. What happened? Say it again. Okay. Said I do. Anyway. I be bugging in here. It just be me. I've been meaning to talk about this for a while. And it's just something that gets me tight every time it comes across my algorithm, and it's really my Twitter algorithm. I don't really say the other name, but anytime I'm on Twitter, right, and I should get off Twitter. Twitter's kind of super falling off, and more and more, it's just like it's even more indication that it ain't the place to be. But anyway, this is a very specific thing that maybe y'all feel me or maybe you don't, but I do not like, I come across these videos of these people that are recording in public places. It's like, that's their thing. It's legal to record here. And they just recording people. just outside and about, walking into stores and stuff like that. But it's like real antagonistic, you know, like I guess they're exercising their right to film and or surveil everybody. You know, we're living in a surveillance state, but they can like just film people. And, you know, like most people, nobody wants a camera pointed at them, you know, especially when you're just trying to do your own thing, trying to be in the world. Somebody just outside. And even if they were there before you, just somebody pointing the camera at you. And when you inquire, it gets a little snarky. I have the right to film. It's legal to record here. Please don't approach me, sir. I mean, what are you? And then like real, real like snarky ass comments. Do you know your rights? Like it starts to get antagonistic. And every time I see these joints, and I've only maybe seen, every time I see these videos, I won't lie, I do hope for somebody to kind of put hands and feet on these people. And I know they're kind of in the right. I mean, they're not in the right, but they're not in the wrong. But it's just something about how smug these people are, and they really out here, they trying to provoke these people. Like, they really trying to provoke these people. Sometimes they got pepper spray if the guy gets too close or whatever. It's just, every time I see it, though, it's something about it that angers me. Just a little bit. Just a little bit to where I was like, I got to talk about this. I've never seen these people in real life. I hope to never see these people in real life. But if you know what I'm talking about, if you've seen any of these videos, please hit me in the comments. Let me know what your thoughts are. It's the corniest thing in the world to me. It's like super corny. That's what you do with your day. What you do with that footage? What do you do with your little surveillance footage all day of just aggravating people? Do you put them on a drive? Do you delete it? Like who, you know, because honestly, maybe they're the type of people to watch all of this. Last night I watched, Monday night for y'all. Transparency. I watched my first World Cup soccer game in full. This might have been the first time I've ever watched a soccer game in full. I've never really been a fan of soccer. Never really jumped into it. Whatever. I didn't grow up watching soccer. Soccer wasn't as prevalent as it is now when I was a kid. Anyway, it's the World Cup. And typically I don't really get World Cup fever, right? But I watched the World Cup with a friend of mine who's like really into the whole soccer thing, right? And it was interesting to watch, and obviously it was a lot of, this particular match I watched, it was the USA versus Belgium. There was a little bit of controversy going on because I guess Trump intervened and got one of the USA players, got his suspension overturned, which a lot of people felt like that was doing too much. Long story short, the guy got to play. The U.S. lost. A lot of people felt like there go the Trump jinx again, kind of, you know, killing the energy. The U.S. was kind of a bit on the run. I mean, for where they are amongst the rest of the countries, you know, like the U.S. is not really competitive to a level that is to be taken super serious. You know, they were doing good for, you know, who they are, but they not up there with like countries like France or Argentina or whatever. Right. Anyway. So, yeah. So I saw it. It was all right. I got somewhat invested in it, you know, because I'm watching it with somebody that's invested in it, and I was watching, and I found myself getting tight with the goalie on the USA. He was fucking up a little bit. But it was fun. It was cool to see. The US, they lost, so they out of here. Belgium's gonna advance. It was cool. It was fine. It was interesting to watch. I'm gonna try to catch France. I'm not really into Argentina, you know what I mean, for many reasons. You know what I'm saying? Especially the fact that Argentina just straight up don't have any black people on their thing. And you know how Argentina is towards black people. They selling nigger burgers over in Argentina, if you ain't know, which is crazy. Nigger burgers. Wow. Anyway, that shit's off the chain. Like, that's even more antagonistic than my man outside fucking, you know, Best Buy recording people walking in and out. But yeah, I might watch France play just to see if I could see. Okay, so this is what it looks like on the top level. This is what, because allegedly France is, either France or Argentina are probably the ones that's going to take the whole thing. So we'll see. I think the last game is July 19th. So, you know, it was interesting to watch. It was interesting to watch. I do realize that not only is it about soccer, the World Cup will remind you, or reminds me, that racism thing is all over. Racism got a passport, bro. Racism comes in many different languages and different customs and all of that. Like, the racism is all over the place. It is time. Raising Canaan Season 5, Episode 4. I'm about to talk about it, so if you don't want no spoilers, run now. Press pause. Go to another podcast. Leave the room. Whatever you need to do. We're about to get into it. Raising Canaan Season 5, Episode 4, Pawns and Rooks. Directed by Pete Chatman. Shout out to my man Pete. I know Pete. Shout out to Pete Chatman. Doing this thing. I remember you put out a movie damn near 20 years ago, Premium. That was really good, man. Shout out to Pete. We open up Canaan on the block with his crew. Business is booming. They moving. Business is booming. Shit is good. You got the Eric B. and Rakim paid in full as the score. You know what I'm saying? Shit is going crazy. Everybody's shining. You know, and up, you know, they having a great time out there selling drugs to the community. And then out of nowhere, Taz pull up. AKA Salt and Vinegar. He pull up, jump out the whip, openly fronts on Canaan in front of his crew. You know what I mean? Try to make him look crazy. Kanan's reserved. Kanan kind of, I don't say defers, but he don't engage. He don't engage it. And they keep cutting to the crew, and which is interesting too, because it kind of triggers the ego, you know, the ego of man. You know what I'm saying? Or just the ego of anything. It's just like, you know, my homie used to say, in front of millions. Like, you just see everybody peeping it. And Canaan keeps his composure, because oftentimes cats did get in there, you know, that ego or get inflamed, and they see them taking what could be construed as an L and act out of character or make a hasty move. Canaan, like, you know what? You got it. You got it. You got it is the ultimate. I'm a table list. But trust me, I ain't ever going to forget. And when I do spin back on this, it's going to have some interest. It's going to have some interest on that retaliation. It's going to be retaliation and then some. But you got it. For right now, you got it. You got that. I ain't no doubt. You got that. You got that. So, yeah. So Taz kind of break on Canaan, try to check him in front of his squad, and he peels off, right? That's how we open up. We see Marvin in the church still has questions about faith and who goes to heaven and, you know, how do you know and what could you do and all of that. And, you know, he's also concerned about Juke, his daughter, you know, based on her lifestyle. He's wondering, is she going to make it into heaven? And the pastor is like, you know, or does his, you know, Marvin is like, does my life kind of hurt her chances and things of that nature? And then, you know, pastor's like, nah, whatever she does, her walk is her walk. Don't worry about it. You know, it's interesting. It's a lot of, it's more of Marvin kind of just looking for answers. I will say this, Marvin is having an all-star season. Season 5 so far, Marvin is putting in work. Marvin and Jukebox are the emotional core of this show. You know, Rock is obviously a draw, and Canaan, it's about Canaan, but they could be so cold, you know, how they move, right? It's very, very rare that you see them, like, really sit with something. They process everything real fast. you know, because that's just, you know, for the sake of the business. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can't afford to just get stuck on anything, or to just what's the word they call it? Navel gazing. Navel gazing ain't really good if you're trying to get to the money. So yeah, so we see Rock meeting with one of her plugs, and Rock is driven. Rock is just trying to close deals this episode. She out here trying to close deals. She got another one of her little, you know what I mean, chic business suit. You know what I'm saying? Drug dealer executive suits. You know what I'm saying? Like little shit. Half Tonisa Welch, half Hillary Clinton. Yeah, Rock out here closing deals, meeting with the people, meeting with the plugs. Trying to make sure everything is good, cause we trying to, we need this engine to start purring. Let's grease these wheels, make sure everybody good. Let me get my FaceTime in. So she's talking to a plug, making sure he don't have any hesitation. He seems to have a little bit of hesitation. She's like, listen, I know you got good work and all of that, but there's at least 10 Dominicans down the block that I can link with. So you let me know. He's like, no, mommy. He didn't say that. But it was like, nah, all right, back. All right, fair enough. I'm still interested. Let's stay committed. Let's stay together. Anyway. So we see that. Then we go cut to Juke and Officer Garcia at the coffee shop. Juke dropping off the envelope. The envelope's a little light. Garcia is not feeling that. He kind of flips on her, lets her know, listen. Don't play games with me. The stakes are super high. Real talk, I would hate to have to kill you. I would hate to have to cut your water off. You know, like, you might be young, but you in grown folks' business now. And what happens in grown folks' business, if you ain't got this the money, you can't move. You can't do it how you want to do it. So I'm just going to let you know, I'm going to give you this warning right now. If I don't get what I need when I need it, we're going to have a problem. I'm trying to be cool about it, you know, because this is still, I guess, this you new. So I'm kind of giving you a bit of orientation. But this is the verbal warning, you know. I'll tell you this. That was a cool scene, but I was also distracted by the prices of that coffee shop. The menu, the donuts were 50 cent a donut. Damn. 50 cent a donut. Damn shit. Donuts now at least 10 times that price. There's places where they got the nerve to charge you $6 for a donut. One donut. You pay $6, you leave with one donut. The dozen on this menu was $5. You get one donut in today's donut economy. $6, $5. $5 is a bargain. $2, really $2 Dunkin' Donuts, but if you want to get sexy donuts, you know what I'm saying? Little fly donuts. Yeah. Prepare to pay $5 to $6 for a donut. And it is, they all right. But I haven't, maybe because I have a point of reference for donuts not being $6, but I've never really eaten a donut, a $6 donut where I was like, yo, I'd pay $8 for that. So anyway, yeah, I was a little distracted looking at that. We got a scene where Rock meets with Pino. She drops off his share. Pino is pleased with the work booming. But, you know, he definitely tells her, listen, DeStefano has been complaining and it's starting to interfere, starting to make waves. You know, the quote unquote, the powers that be. We don't really want to upset them. So I would love it if you could sit down with DeStefano and like try to smooth things over. His ego is hurt. You know, she's like, man, I felt like I already tried to sit down with him and this is ridiculous. He wants me to kiss a ring that I bought him. You know, I thought that was a slick line. And, you know, Pino's kind of like, I don't know, but I mean, yo, just look out. See what you could do. Another thought I had when I was watching this, she drops off the, you know, his share. Nice leather duffel bag. You know, it's always, when they do that, it's always the nice little leather attaché or a good duffel bag, depending on the type of business you're doing. But it's a good, nice, look like a good soft lambskin leather duffel bag. And I'm wondering, like, now, does Rock get the duffel bag back after the sit down? Like, after my man does the count, does he pull the money out the duffel bag, give that back? Or is that just part of the transaction? And every time there's a new duffel bag for the new drop off. Just wondering. It's the question. Cut to Breeze at the office playing chess with himself. One of his workers stops through to drop off some money and tells Breeze about the Kanan and Taz friction. Breeze does not acknowledge this man at all. He's just stuck in this game with him and him. He is not acting as though he don't hear him, which made me pay more attention to the guy's acting, more attention than I wanted to this young man's acting, and I, no comment. But anyway, so he says all of that. Yo, Kanan and Taz, it looks like it's issues. You know, it could turn into some. Taz looked like he was trying to bait Kanan. Kanan ain't really take the bait, but, you know, it's static. You know, kind of just, I guess he's the instigation messenger. And, you know, Breeze egged him. He heard him, you know, but he ain't even look his way. So my man was like, all right, well, I'll see myself out. It was funny watching that scene because it was like I said, the acting was the acting, but it was also like, I guess when you're talking to somebody that's not giving you anything, it's like he got louder. He got louder, like as if the guy didn't hear him. And that only made it sound even worse. Yo, okay. You know, it's just you and him in the room. You know he hear you. He just not listening to you. That's got to be demoralizing. You know what I'm saying? Like, damn, I hope the money is good, because if not, it's very thankless. But, yeah, anyway, so that's that. He tells Breeze, yo, FYI, Breeze, you know, puts that, takes that, makes a note of it. Something for him to work with. Maybe manipulate the two of them. Cut to Rock meeting with Stefano to kind of keep things with Pino going cool. They sit down. DeStefano's still giving her a hard time. Rock kind of checks him. Like, look, man, you over here bitching like an ex. You like a scorned ex that can't get over the fact that we not together no more. You telling everybody all types of things. You know, you out here and he's tight. Now, you know, he's ego is fragile. He's tight. You know, it gets a little crazy. Stefano says, basically, yo, I'll put you in the dirt. Rock is like, yo, listen, you got to do what you got to do. I'm here. You know what I'm saying? You got to do what you got to do. You know, like, because Stefano actually says, yo, you know what I need? I need a little piece of the action, a finder's fee. Since basically you went past me and now you working with Pino, I need to be head off. And Rocket had to remind him, like, I didn't leave at all. I tried to keep our relationship, our working relationship going, but you ain't want to do nothing. You felt like it's too much stress. So I don't know. I don't understand what you're talking about. I don't owe you shit. He takes issue to that. They get a little heated. He threatens to kill her. She's like, well, you know, do what you got to do. Storms off. She walks up out of there. I ain't even storm off. She smooths up out of there. I'm going to tell you, this episode, Rock's aura is on like 1,000. There's a little moment where she got, when her and Breeze are talking, she got a little line in there that's, that we'll get to it. So she leaves. They cut to Marvin and Rock. They talk and she's recapping them about the meeting that she had with Stefano. And basically like, yo, we probably going to have to, we're going to have to hit him. We'll have to go at him because he's coming for us. He already threatened violence. You know, he feels away, so we might have to get him before he gets us. And we need to do it in a way that doesn't implicate Pino, because that's gonna destroy business. So Marvin is like, well, I got a crew out of Memphis we could call. I don't know if they've ever introduced this crew from Memphis before, but he's like, yeah, I could call a crew from Memphis and they could make it so it don't come back to us. You know, it'll be hard to track it to us. I could call them. Rock kind of reluctantly agrees, so Marvin makes the call. We see Kanan laid up with Tiana. They chopping it up. Tiana's Flossie's, one of Flossie's girls. I guess he's he's a repeat customer now. He got his loyalty card clipped, and now she coming to his house. They ain't even meeting at the hotel no more. They laid up in the bed like they together. She pillow talking like she got Tourette's. She telling Kanan everything about how she moving, telling him way too much. It's like ridiculous. So then he kind of, he peeping game. He finding out, he's figuring out who Flossie is, what's Flossie's relationship to Rock, and now he's plotting and planning. He got Tiana open. He takes her out on the town to, you know, play pretty woman with her, go get her something. That kind of triggered her a little bit when he seen it. She trying to, you know, he trying to throw money at her. He gave her some money to not go to work. Tried to take her out to go get some, takes her shopping, you know, on some old pretty woman love bombing type shit. That kind of triggers her. She gets a little nervous. She steps out the store. She's like, yo, I see what you're trying to do. I don't want that. You know, you don't even know me. I'm a whore. You know what I'm saying? I'm a hoe. He was like, well, hoes don't wear dresses. You don't even know my real name. He was like, what's your real name? My real name is Jarita. I was like, oh, okay, nice. It's funny when the alias name is a little flyer than the real name. You know what I'm saying? It's always a moment of adjustment. You know, oh, okay, Jarita. Shout out to the Jaritas listening. No disrespect. But, yeah, so they had that little moment. So Tiana's feeding Kanan a whole bunch of intel, and she don't even realize it. She don't even realize that she's being pimped. We see the Memphis crew pull up, three deep, Big Hat in the crew, Big Hat in the fellas. Barvin makes a little slick line. Yeah, they growing them ugly on the farm out in Memphis. My man say, ain't no farms in Memphis. Slick line, ain't no farms in Memphis. I've never been to Memphis, but I need to go. I need to go, but I've been wanting to go to Memphis for a long time. I know a lot of good people from Memphis. And, yeah, I've never been. And it's funny because the last time I watched a scene in, my favorite scene in, what is it called? Queen and Slim was when they stopped through the little speakeasy in Memphis when he was on the run. That was probably my favorite scene of that movie. I hated the ending of that movie. But it was like one of those moments I was like, oh, yeah, I got to get to Memphis. You know. And shout out to Memphis. But anyway, so he picked them up. He drives them around. He shows them where DeStefano, where the haunt is, lets them know, listen, if you go on strike, y'all got it. You can't miss. Because if you miss, it's going to get hairy and you probably will not be able to go home. You know, this kid is mobbed up. So you got one shot at the deal, literally. All right. So just FYI, does that. Takes them to wherever they need to go. We'll get back to them in a second. Breeze and Rock finally meet. Again, I told you, Rock is on one this episode. Rock pulls up in the leather duster, meets Breeze in the park. Looked like the same park where her and Unique used to have their little meetings. Rock says to Breeze, I'm not on these blocks no more, but I am these blocks. I'm known and I know. And then she says some more slick shit and she smooths off. She just storms off, walks off. Like, listen, and tell my son. You know what I mean? Like, they had a conversation. They basically had a conversation. They get to know each other, kind of. They finally meet. Breeze realizes that Rock is the one that set the hit or shot up his block, you know? She said, listen, I don't like to see anybody getting money on any of these blocks. When I see anybody getting a dollar on these blocks, I feel like you're taking a dollar from me, you know? Breeze is saying he don't really like it when women are in the game because he don't really know their motivation. He says when it's another dude, he know the motivation for men is bitches and money. Money and bitches. You know, but when it's a woman, it's like, well, I know you like money, but I don't know if you like bitches like that. So it's like, well, what you in the game for? Rock is like, it's always about the money. You know what I mean? But then she said a couple other slick things, and then she turns on it. She spins on the hill and walks off. You got to commit to the walk-off. Got to commit to the walk-off. If you do the turn-off, walk-off, after you say some slick shit, you got to commit to the fact that you might get shot in the back. There's that. That is an occupational hazard. You could get shot in the back, but if not, you just gonna make a mean exit. And you just got to walk back. Do not look over your shoulder because it undermines the whole walk off. Your whole walk off. You cannot look back. You got to go. Tell nigga you were just a small speck. You know what I mean? You got to walk to you all the way out of eyesight. You know what I mean? Or walk into a car or whatever. But you just cannot look back. You got to commit. Natty Cannon's got the information that Jarrida told him about how Floss and your rock you know, moving to work and getting it to these little upscale clients. Kanan camps out outside of Cafe Vu, kidnaps one of Flossie's escorts, Kirsten, and basically takes her to the drop, gives her some bad work. She goes in there, she gives it to, you know, her client. He sniffs it. This shit kills him instantly. You know, I don't know what it was. Rat poison, glass, whatever. He dies immediately. Boom. Now that done fucked the game up. She comes out. She's shaking, crying. Kanan pulls her to the side, says, yo, you make sure you tell Rock it was Kanan. You make sure. She's like, all right. So I felt bad for the guy. I felt bad for the client because he had his Get High music on. I forget what record it was, but he was in his little robe and shit dancing. He was ready to take all the way off. You know what I'm saying? He was on the runway. He was on the runway getting to it. He couldn't wait for her. He was like, yo, when I'm done with this, I'm going to get with you. And then it was over for him. Sorry, guy. Kirsten goes back to tell Rock what Kanan told her. Rock was like, yo, you don't tell nobody, especially Flossie, that part of it. Don't tell nobody. This is between you and I. Don't say his name, because if you do, I'm going to have to do some shit that can't be undone. It can't be undone. So just FYI, you know, hold that. That's between you and I. So there's that. There's a moment where Jukebox tells Marvin, yo, I got a thing with Officer Garcia. I'm paying him off. I ain't got all the money, you know, and I might need your help. Marvin is kind of like, listen, your deal, your debt, that's on you. I'm proud of you, but you're going to have to figure that out. You know what I'm saying? You got a cop on the take. You're doing your thing, Juke, but, you know, hey, I can't bail you out. If you want to really be in it, you in it. The line that he said, you know, cop on the take ain't the nigga you want to short. That's real shit. Cut back to the Memphis 3. They about to go and, you know, do their hit on Stefano. The three pull up. They get in the car. Big Hat gets behind the two in the car. Kills both of them. Boom, boom. Goes to Stefano. Tells Stefano what happened. Who hired him. He thinking that ratting on Marvin will get him in good graces with Stefano. Stefano plays the role a little bit. Says, yo, you know what? Thank you for informing me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give you double what she was going to pay you. Here you go. And we're going to take you to your car. Follow my man out there. They take him outside, put a bullet in him. He's done. Get him out of here. He's an idiot. He is an idiot. He should have stuck to the script. See, what happens when you ad-lib, you wind up on the cutting room floor. Breeze tells Kanan that Taz was short and that he needs Kanan to go check Taz. Right? So Kanan goes to confront Taz, call him on the fact that, you know, he was short, handle business. And, you know, it's obviously bad blood between the two of them. He pulls up on Taz. He says, yo, man, Breeze told me you short. You know what I'm saying? We got a problem. Taz is like, Kanan, I don't even realize if you see it, but he's playing us against each other. You know what I'm saying? He's trying to create a conflict and put us at odds. So that we basically, you know, only one of us is going to survive this. You know, he's like, and I'm with that. I'm with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm good with that. You know, if it's going to be one or the other, I'm about to walk out of here. He talk all of that shit, but he does not swing. And unfortunately, Kanan does. Kanan caught him straight from the shoulders. Boop. Hit him with a nasty hook, you know, blood in his mouth. Taz goes to reach for his gun. Kanan is quick on the draw, shoots him in the knee. Taz hits the ground. Now he's crawling around, blood. And then, you know, he goes to say some shit. Fuck you, Kanan. Kanan's like, nah, nigga, fuck you. Shoots in the head. Boom. Done. We got Taz up out of there. R.I.P. Salt and Vinegar. It was open and close. I guess it was good that they got that out the way. Because it was starting to drag. And I was like, all right. I wanted to be a little bit, like I said, I wish was a little bit more depth, but it was what it was. I think that that little bit of insight on how Breeze can manipulate everybody that he works with, I think that was something that Kanan took. And we'll find out a little later that, you know, Taz's death wasn't all the way in vain. I mean, he had to go, but Taz left him with a little jewel, like, you know, don't trust him. I was his homie, and now I'm about to be dead. We see Rock, Flossie, Marvin, and Kirsten having a debriefing regarding, you know, the death of her client, Anton Baker, federal judge. Kirsten is shaking, you know. Flossie's consoling her. I like Flossie. I like Flossie. I'm still trying to get a read on her. She's dedicated to her girls. You know, she seems to be caring. She's not a gorilla pimp. She's thoughtful. She's, you know, like it seems like they feel good with her, right? But when Kirsten leaves and Rock says, yo, you want, you know, offers to kind of take care of her. One thing I noticed about Flossie, Flossie's like, you don't really have to get into the semantics around, you know, you don't got to be coy around me. Say what you feel, because I'm going to translate it, you know, for the record. You know what I'm saying? Like, listen, Rock, you ain't got to dance around the fact. I know you sell drugs. When you tell me, hey, do you want me to take care of her? I know what you're saying. Would I like you to kill this person? Nah, I don't need that. But, you know, we could speak. We don't need to dance around this. No, I don't need you to kill her. And I'm not afraid of violence, you know. If it's ever a time to pull the trigger, I won't hesitate, you know. But my thing with violence is it needs to be necessary. That's what my pops told me, you know, because if you do it needlessly, it takes the power away from it. So that's how I conduct myself. It's just like, okay. Makes me also wonder, who was Flossie's father? They go downstairs. Rock and Marvin, they leaving Flossie's house. Rock turns to Marvin and was like, yo, what's up with you and Flossie? See, you getting all googly-eyed around her. Y'all, she all googly-eyed around you. What's the deal? He's like, what you talking about? He says, I don't know. It's just, he's like, look, we cool. We friends. We associates. It's nothing more than that. He says, all right, well, don't pop up with no little bed and breakfast together. You know what I'm saying? Building a family or no shit like that. Talking, doing things behind my back like you did with Stefano. You know, and at that moment, Marvin takes a moment to kind of check her out. Like, hold on now. I'll never move behind your back. I have relationships with all these people, and I will continue to do so because I'm a grown-ass man. I can talk to whomever I want to talk to. You know, because the reality is, which I thought you should have known, but if you don't, let me explain something to you. I'm loyal. I've always been loyal to you. Stefano tried to play us against each other. I never let that happen. It's always been you and I, and that, especially now that Lou's gone, Ma's gone, Pop's been gone. It's just us two. Kanan ain't fucking with you. So trust me. I'm damn near all you got. Yeah, she takes a minute. She realizes that. Cut to Kanan and Breeze in some old bathroom, spatchcocking Taz's dead body. It's a good time to have a nice, honest conversation about roles and expectations. So Breeze tells Kanan he met Rock and that she hit the corner and that he felt like Kanan knew that already. Kanan was like, well, I wasn't 100% about it. Breeze was like, well, you know, listen, we can't be keeping secrets. So then Kanan says, you know what? I feel you on that. So to that, I don't think Taz was ever short. I think you did that to get me and Taz to go at each other. And Breeze kind of concedes. He says, well, listen, that wasn't really a secret. That was more of a test. And then, you know, Kanan was like, listen, man, I don't need no test. I done graduated, nigga. And then he grabs the little sword and he starts dismembering Taz just to let him know, listen, I know how to do this shit too. They wound up tossing Taz's body into in like an incinerator. And they in front of the burning body again, they continue their conversation. Breeze is like, listen, man, you don't really gotta worry about me. Basically, I'm above board. Kanan's like, listen, I'm not worried about you. I'm just paying attention. You know, you're telling me all of this, but Taz used to be your man. And now he's in the flames. So I have to observe what I see, you know? And then that's when Breeze says, yo, did you know DEF CON? And he's like, did you know your father, DEF CON? He was like, ah, well, you know, I heard of him. I never met him, but I know the legend of him. And Breeze is like, yeah, I knew him. He was like, yeah, man, that's my father, you know? And he had me with another woman before he had you, you know, with Rock. So we brothers. And that's when he found out they half brothers. Now, who knows if that shit is real or not? Because Breeze lies just as fast as he'll tell the truth. So I don't know, but it's kind of a way to kind of endear them and kind of like, yeah, Taz was my man, but we're blood. So I'm not going to try to, you know, cross you like I did homie. Like we're kin. Marvin and Rock pull up to Cafe Vu. Juke tells Marvin, yo, there's a messenger there that's been waiting for you to come out. He can't leave until you sign for this box. So Marvin signs for the box. He asks the messenger who sent it. The messenger's like, I'm just a messenger, and runs out of there. They open the box only to find Big Hat's hat with a bullet hole in it. And they're like, uh-oh, it's problems. So now they know that DeStefano knows they tried to make a move on him and there's going to be some type of retaliation and they need to get ready. And that was that. That's the whole episode. It was a pretty good episode, man. Yeah, it was good. It was a good episode. It wasn't, you know, I don't think I missed anything. I got a couple questions, though. One of the things that I want to know is I'm curious who bought the mall from Rock. Some cat that they say, she says like an idiot or he's stupid because he overpaid some dude from or somebody from a, you know, foreign cat. I'm curious if they're going to turn up and we're going to find out who that is or if that's just a throwaway line. It was funny. Marvin realizing Shirley was watering down the liquor. Oh, she was always a tricky ass broad. That was funny. Sometimes I watch it with subtitles on just so I catch all of the dialogue. My AC be loud. So it's always funny when it says music darkens. What the fuck does that mean? 50s end of show, like 50s little narrations at the beginning and end of the shows, they've gotten a lot better. They are way more aligned to the episode and the writing than they used to be. And it adds to it. It's a good bookend to each episode. So I'm fucking with that. And watching Taz die, I seen them bloody Ewings and it reminded me, Ewings were just as heavy as Tim's back in the day. Ewings was cool for a little bit of time that they were cool, but them joints was some clunky kicks. Them joints was heavy. They were fire, but they was heavy for sure. September 20th, 2026. If you are in the Arlington, Virginia area, come on down to Arlington Draft House. I'll be headlining Arlington Draft House. There's tickets on sale right now. ArlingtonDraftHouse.com, DamianLemon.com. Come on out there. We want to sell that bitch out. I want to see y'all. I want to see y'all. Thank you for listening. Especially if you made it this far, thank you for listening. I always appreciate y'all, respect y'all, and engage with it, man. You know, leave a comment. What y'all feeling with this Raising Canaan season? How y'all feeling about the World Cup? Are you following the World Cup? You know what I mean? Anything else? You inspired to chop it up? Chop it up in the comments. Get in the comments with somebody else. Get in the conversation with somebody else. And as always, tell a friend to tell a friend. Seriously. And even an enemy. You know? Hello. Get in the conversation.
Peace.